You can eat all the right foods, take the best supplements, and exercise daily, but if your gut isn't functioning properly, your whole system suffers. That's because your microbiome impacts far more than digestion. It shapes your immune system, your skin, your metabolism, even your mood. Welcome back to another episode of the Biohacker Bundy podcast, where we talk all things health, wellness, longevity, and of course, biohacking. I'm your host, Jenny Jones, and I've spent years exploring cutting-edge ways to optimize the body and brain so you can take your health into your own hands. Today's guest is Ara Katz, co-founder and co-CEO of Seed Health, the company revolutionizing the world of probiotics through real science, strain-specific precision, and next-generation delivery systems. In this episode, we dive into what most probiotics get wrong and how Seed is doing things differently, how your gut microbiome shapes immunity, skin health, and inflammation, why the DS01 daily symbiotic is clinically tested to survive digestion and actually work. We also get into Seed's sustainability mission and the future of microbiome therapeutics. And if you're loving this podcast, please subscribe and share. It's the best way to support the show. It's free and it helps me keep bringing you the most trusted voices and tools in the health optimization space. So now let's get into this eye-opening episode with Ara of Seed. Okay, so welcome to another episode of the Biohacker Bundy podcast. I'm so excited because we are here with Ara of founder of Seed, and it's all about probiotics, gut microbiome. We're going to get all into the microbiome, what makes a good probiotic, all the things. It's the number one probiotic, I believe, in the U.S., not sure around the world. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And yeah, if you can just give a little intro and what made you start a probiotic supplement company.
Sure. First of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I mean, we don't really consider ourselves a supplement company. We really started Seed as a microbiome science company, and it's what we are today. Me and my co-founder, I think both shared this kind of very clear vision that we really wanted to create a company that could help realize and steward some of the potential we saw in the area of the microbiome, which, when we first started, was obviously a term that was not as often used as it is today. And one of the ways, you know, I think there's a few pathways for impact when you start a company, a science company. The first was, of course, to advance some of the frontier research that was happening, which is something we do in different areas of Seed. The second was to figure out how we could translate some of this frontier science into innovations, sometimes therapeutics, in the case of what you were talking about, also some case in the form of probiotics. And while we have mostly released probiotics to date, coming will also be other microbiome-directed innovation that's not necessarily a probiotic. And then the third way that we really wanted to make an impact was also with the brand that we were creating, which really, I think, has become very well known, and we've won a lot of awards for our science communication and our commitment to education. So it wasn't just creating great products, but it was also making sure that we were stewarding kind of a lot of integrity around how the microbiome was translated, and really always taking this very education first approach. So that's us.
Yeah, it's such a... it's a hot topic, and there's so much to still learn. Like, our microbiome is full of so much bacteria and microorganisms, all that stuff. So it's like, there's so much I'm sure we're going to even learn in the future. And I think most people think of the microbiome as just the gut microbiome, but it's like our skin microbiome, like our oral microbiome, all those play a role of how our cells are communicating. And kind of, it's really cool it's an amazing topic to get into. So I'm super excited. So you started to develop this probiotic. A lot of people just think of probiotics as kind of like, let me go to the store, CVS or Walgreens or something, and go get a probiotic. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wanted to get into the details of the probiotic, how you created this formula,
And then all the myths or what people think of with a probiotic, refrigeration, non-refrigeration, do most probiotics, you know, just go to waste because of our stomach acid? There's so many questions. So I guess the first one is, you know, years ago, we thought we had to refrigerate probiotics. We'll start with that.
So I never thought I'd include whey protein in my diet until I found Kona Nutrition. Now I get it, why it's everyone's go-to for building muscle, because it actually works. I had the pleasure of interviewing the founder, and we talked all about whey versus beef isolate and why whey is more effective when it comes to building muscle. But Kona Nutrition is more than just protein powder. Their whole mission is health first. Their whey comes from cows that have 2 acres to roam. It's grass-fed, RBST-free, no soy, no GMOs, no antibiotics. It's minimally processed with the lowest heat possible, which makes it way easier on the digestive system. And it's third-party tested. Seriously, it's the cleanest whey protein I've ever tried. I add it to my froth milk, my cookies, my psyllium husk breakfast, and it's the perfect way to start your day with protein to help balance blood glucose and stay full longer. You can find the link in the show notes for a special discount, or you can use my code BiohackerBlondie at checkout.
So what is that myth?
Well, I mean, I think you said just go to the store and pick one up. I think one of the things that is very curious is it's one of the few categories, if you think about other supplementation, you wouldn't just go to the grocery store and just pick up a vitamin no matter what it is, right? Like, mm-hmm. So like vitamin D3 does something so different than vitamin C, and you wouldn't just grab a creatine if you wanted protein, right? So it's really strange because the way that probiotics kind of came about, which was a little bit like the relic of the dairy industry, it really started out kind of doing what you're saying, which is just throwing a bunch of bacteria and particularly microbes that were coming more, again, out of the dairy industry than necessarily ones that had been studied for their impact in human health. And so probiotics became I'll just grab a probiotic, but kind of with no specificity. And also when the field started, there wasn't a lot of specificity about which strain. It would just say, and actually it's not required to be labeled. So it would just say like the species of the microbe or of the bacteria that was included. And so, you know, it really became a little bit synonymous with this, kind of this thing you do for digestion. And it really, as I said, kind of grew out of the dairy industry. I think what's really cool is, you know, the term probiotic actually has a very specific scientific definition. It was first defined by the UN panel that chaired kind of a whole forum on the definition of and multiple probiotics and prebiotics and other biotics. And that was chaired by Dr. Gregor Reid, who was our first chief scientific officer and probably the most published scientist in the whole space of probiotics.
Wow. As
like remind me often.
Wow.
And there's a regulatory body called ISAP, which is the International Society of Probiotics and Prebiotics. And they have very stringent and very clear definitions. So the actual scientific definition of a probiotic is that it is a microbe, a bacteria that when administered in adequate amounts, which means that the dose matters, it confers a benefit to the host. And that means it has been clinically studied to have an impact on the host, which is in this case us. And so, you know, and then when you get into prebiotics, there's actually subtypes of prebiotics, and they also have themselves very, very specific definitions. It's not just like fiber. It's not like all fibers equal and the same, okay. Nor does it function the same. And so, you know, when we first started Seed, I think bringing some specificity and precision to this field was very important because, you know, particularly if probiotics are going to become drugs or probiotics are going to start solving some of these really big problems that we have and treating conditions and or just being used preventively and proactively, if everyone just thinks they're just like grab a probiotic, it's not going to really realize its potential. And I think that was something we cared a lot about bringing specificity and precision to. And so that also, because it's such a kind of catch-all term, with that came, as you were articulating, a lot of myths and a lot of a lot of kind of misunderstandings and misinformation. And so, and part of it was just, you know, not intentional. It was just early in the field. And some of it, I think, today is a bit opportunistic because, of course, the field has come far enough that we know some of these things not to necessarily be true. And so the refrigeration just came, as I said, originally out of the fact that, like, it was very crude kind of relics of the dairy industry. And so a lot of these strains weren't being, no one really understood the stability of them. They couldn't be stable outside of, you know, being refrigerated, which of course very likely means if they couldn't, you know, withstand with refrigeration, they're very likely kind of withstand acidic environment of your stomach to start.
I recently went to a wellness conference and discovered something I had to share. This amazing little device called Filter Baby. It's a faucet attachment for your bathroom sink that filters out all the contaminants in tap water. And let me tell you, it makes your skin glow. At the booth, all the girlies showed me their before and afters, and I was honestly shocked. I just added it to my own faucet, and I can already see a difference in my skin. Most tap water is full of chlorine and chemicals that strip your skin's microbiome, killing good bacteria and causing skin dysbiosis, which leads to breakouts and dullness, but not with Filter Baby. If you care about what goes on your skin as much as what goes in your body, this is a game changer. You can use my code BiohackerBlondie or head to filterbaby.com/BiohackerBlondie. Again, that's filterbaby.com/BiohackerBlondie for a special discount.
And so it was kind of questions, brings into question really what was getting to the colon and what was actually making its way through the GI tract. And so the refrigeration, I mean, unless you have microbes that are really challenging to stabilize, most probiotics, I think, should undergo their own, the burden to put on, not on us, on the consumer, but on the company to. That being said, I think under certain conditions, refrigeration could, of course, perhaps extend the lifespan stability, and that is something that we sometimes see. But the idea that they have to be refrigerated to be viable, you know, for us, we have very long stability, and we've both in high heat and in cold, and I think it's the heat, the resistance that we're very proud of. We've done a lot of work and. Incredibly high heat environments. I mean, the thing about probiotics, it's not really what's, you know, just for body, like even just delivering in Arizona in the back of a FedEx truck in the middle of summer will expose a probiotic to quite high heat. So we've done a lot of that testing. And
wow.
Ours withstand that kind of, those kind of stressors like temperature. Probiotics don't like light either. You know, oxygen and water aren't great for them. Moisture, you know, are not great for them. So those are all the challenges that in developing probiotics you kind of often have to solve for.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool how you guys support different parts, like heart health, certain bacteria probiotics for the heart, certain probiotics for the skin. So how do you know which ones are needed? And then I was listening to another podcast of yours too, with the vagina, it is, you need only like one probiotic instead of in our gut, we need all different sorts of probiotics and bacteria. So if you can kind of explain where that came from, like how do we know which is needed for our skin or our heart or the vagina?
So very similarly, like what I was saying, you know, you wouldn't go to the grocery store, you wouldn't go to a pharmacy and buy medicine for a headache if you have a stomach ache, right? Like you wouldn't even proactively necessarily, take biotin for cognitive function, right? For like to boost your mental health, right? It's the same exact thing in probiotics, which is very specific strains. Behave very, very, very do very specific things in the human body. So it's the same exact thing as anything that you'd want to take with a certain amount of specificity that you were putting, you know, I think in your body. Some strains, for example, work, as you mentioned, skin. So certain strains, and you were saying that we have microbes all over our body, which is true, and we have these different microbiomes, like we have the skin microbiome, the oral microbiome, the gut microbiome. But they also have axes. So there's a lot of axes, like the gut-skin axis, the gut-brain axis. Most people know about the gut-brain connection. And so the gut is also, in addition to having these kind of satellites of microbiomes on our body, we also have these axes, which are these points of communication, which are like this is the kind of bi-directional communication that's happening between the gut and some of these different organ systems and like the gut-skin axis. And so when you ask me about certain strains, there are certain strains that are studied to do very specific things on these axes. So for example, within DS01, which is our kind of leading probiotic that most people know us for, there are strains that work on dampening like the inflammatory response on the gut-skin axis. So those are strains that were studied and really understood mechanistically to work very specifically just on that. Then there are obviously other strains that are just studied very, very specifically where you see by taking these strains, they can induce motility. So they trigger and signal to the neurotransmitters that control motility, which is literally just muscular contractions to be able to move stool. But so every strain, I think the most important take-home message is that different strains for different reasons and different strains, and by the way, and different doses, because it's not just the strain, it's that you need to know that you're getting the right amount to the right place. So what is the right dose? You get the strain to all the way, for example, to the colon, where it can then do its job or signal to another microbe, perform a certain function.
I'm curious if certain probiotic or certain bacteria can influence disease. Like if you don't have certain bacteria, can that influence Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or neurological disease?
So they're starting to be able to look at the signatures of the gut, not always around composition, but also around function. So it's not always like which microbes are present, but sometimes it's about what are they doing, because there's something called functional redundancy, which means that different microbes could perform the same role. So it's not always, which is, they metabolize things. So you could have two different strains in your gut that do and perform different, the same function. So one, just like which microbes, but to your point, just to make it very reductive, they are able to and starting to be able to look at like a microbial signatures that, for example, like just by looking at the gut, you could say this person very likely has depression. Person is predisposed to certain diseases. With Parkinson's and the gut, there's a lot of really interesting research starting again to look at what is the role that the gut plays. What are those specific, do you see in Parkinson's patients specific gut microbiome signatures? It's very also interesting just because you mentioned Alzheimer's, also the oral microbiome. So if you think about the proximity to the brain, starting to really think about the role of the oral microbiome in the development of neurocognitive decline and other kind of neurocognitive diseases as well. So the kind of take-home message is that with many diseases and many conditions, we are seeing very high correlations with dysbioses, which is a very fancy word for just saying kind of like imbalances or disruptions. In the gut, for example, or in the, you know, in the oral microbiome, as I said, with some of the neurocognitive disease. And it's very, very, it's awesome because to start to understand this, because it gives us kind of a new vector for and a new area for thinking about intervention, but also, of course, very excitingly thinking about prevention and proaction, right? Being so proactive so that we understand that by nurturing our gut in a very specific way, starting very early in life, even prenatally in some cases, we can really impact the development of particularly inflammatory disorders, which some of the ones that you mentioned kind of are often correlated with like high inflammation. And so we know that the gut plays a huge role in mediating inflammation in the body. And we know that inflammation plays a huge role in the development of certain and onset of certain diseases.
And are there certain strains in the probiotic that can help with gut permeability?
Yes, so DS01 as a formulation has been studied to induce, there's a few things. There's a couple strains that are actually very specifically were even previously studied as part of our development to look at their expression of improving tight junctions So those are the junctions, those are the connective tissue or the connectors kind of between the epithelial cells to really keep everything very tight in that epithelial barrier. And then as a whole formulation, we have done a lot of work and actually one of the first probiotics to really show the inducement of improved gut barrier function. And again, that kind of tight junction expression, which is very, very important for the maintaining that incredibly important kind of epithelial wall.
Yeah, not letting certain things you don't want in your bloodstream. And with autoimmunity on the rise and disease as well, like the gut is everything. You do not want gut permeability. And I think a lot of people are struggling with that. Of course, diet, lifestyle, toxins, it's honestly very difficult to stay healthy in this, this new world of...
We work with a scientist. His name is Dr. Chesney Actis, and he's at CIAF in Switzerland. He is the scientist that coined the epithelial barrier theory, which is really very, very simply the notion that we basically live based on our modern world and the environment that we live in. We basically live in a state of persistent and inflammation. And that is why, that's why we see the rise of conditions, starting around 1950, 1960, very, very few of the things we're talking about today even existed. And that is when, about 150,000 kind of compounds that the human body was never, ever exposed to before in human history were introduced in the form of chemicals and cleaning products and, environmentally, just if you live near certain factories, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Water systems running off into the river, ecologically, of course, having major environmental impacts as well. And you see, there's a very famous chart called the Bach chart that shows the rise of these diseases, Alzheimer's, atopic dermatitis, psoriasis, metabolic disease. I mean, you name it, like all of the autoimmune conditions. And you just see that basically after that time point, all of these things have just risen and risen and risen. And it's very interesting because we never really have died as humans in history. We usually die of communicable diseases, the COVID world, the plagues, the pandemic. But now we die of non-communicable diseases. And, his belief is that it's our barriers, all the barriers of our body, which, our skin included, our nasal barrier, our gut, of course, these surfaces that are just consistently and persistently salted.
Mm-hmm.
Our bodies were just, our biology really wasn't made for this world. And so we're quite resilient. I think we do a pretty good job. We're also very, very, very sick as a result. And so his belief is that we do live in this kind of persistent state of inflammation. Everybody, no matter what, how healthy you are, of course, it impacts different people differently, of course.
Yeah, I think, and we all have a different state of mind of what is unhealthy versus what's really healthy. Like what I thought was healthy maybe 2 or 3 years ago, is not healthy of what as I am now. For instance, energy. I thought I had energy 2 years ago and now my energy has increased so much. And so I just think a lot of people are struggling with mental and physical health issues. And they just have normalized it. And this is not normal. We have to say these diseases are not normal. And they are new. And it's because of all these toxins and chemicals we're surrounded by. So, and then we have to think about our gut microbiome and our gut permeability and trying to prevent, autoimmunity. So, yeah, it's a whole thing, but we're here to spread the word and give the knowledge and find those good bacteria to support a healthy microbiome. So many more questions. I wanted to also talk about the capsule and stomach acid. So a lot of probiotics out there do not have a capsule. So are they not really, is there any studies?
When you say they don't have a capsule, you mean that they're, what do you mean?
Because you have a capsule that helps get through the stomach acid.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So many of them are in capsules. Ours is in what's called a cap. I thought you meant more like some of the powders. Like some people ask me sometimes about powders, but we developed this ViaCap technology, which is a probiotic capsule inside of a prebiotic capsule. And what that does is, it's dark on the exterior. It's our dark green capsule, which a lot of people know us for. And the reason that that's very important is because a lot of people, you'll see other brands that have like a capsule inside of a capsule. It's sold by a company called Lonza, but you have to use a liquid exterior. But what's very is that our prebiotic, the cool thing about this is that our prebiotic goes into the body and it starts to break up and degrade before. And that's where the prebiotics are. That's where it's called punicalgin. It's from pomegranate. That's where that, so it starts to open up at the top, more like top of the GI tract. And so it starts to be fermented actually by microbes as it goes through the GI tract, but keeping also intact and protecting the inner probiotic capsule. So our microbes are making its way through the stomach all the way through the GI tract and then being released fully into the colon, which we have a lot of really interesting data for.
Are you ready to step up your health game? I'm excited to share an exclusive offer from Vivo Barefoot, the pioneers in barefoot footwear designed to bring you closer to nature and improve your overall well-being. Vivo Barefoot shoes are crafted to promote natural movement, enhance your posture, and strengthen your feet. Whether you're hitting the trails, the gym, or just walking around town, these shoes are the perfect companion for your biohacking journey. And the best part, as a Biohacker Blondie listener, you get an exclusive 10% off your purchase with the special discount code BHB. Just enter BHB at checkout and enjoy the benefits of barefoot living. Ready to take the next step? Head over to the link in the show notes or visit biohackerblondie.com to grab your pair of Vivo Barefoot shoes today. Your feet will thank you. I also want to share with you my favorite skincare brand, Young Goose. I recently had an amazing conversation with the founder, Emma Tay, on the podcast, and I can't stop raving about their incredible product line. Young Goose is the number one biohacking skincare brand, and for good reason. Their products are designed to work at the cellular level, providing unparalleled results. I love every product in their line, from their serums to their moisturizers. Everything is formulated with the highest quality ingredients and innovative technology. And here's something special for my listeners. Young Goose has generously provided a discount code just for you. Use the code BHB10 at checkout to get 10% off your purchase. Make sure to check the show notes for the link and the code. Treat your skin to the best biohacking skincare out there with Young Goose and experience the transformation for yourself. Are you looking for a convenient and effective way to experience the benefits of peptides without the need for injections? Look no further than Level Up Health, my go-to brand for meticulously stacked oral peptides designed for maximum benefit. Their offerings include powerful options like liver support, gut repair, and BPC-157, and they just launched their latest innovation, Neuro Regenerate, perfect for supporting brain health and cognitive function. Whether you're at home or traveling, these oral peptide stacks provide a hassle-free solution to boost your wellness journey. Ready to try them out? Head over to levelup.health.com, that is levelup.health.com, and use the code BIOHACKERBLONDIE, that is BIOHACKERBLONDI, yes, just with an I, at checkout to receive 10% discount. The details and links will also be available in the show notes. Don't miss out this opportunity to elevate your health with Level Up Health's premium peptide stacks.
And so the exterior actually has both a biological benefit, because that punicalgin is then having surface area as a prebiotic with other microbes in your GI tract, as well as helping to protect and also draw out moisture. Remember I said earlier, there's a few things that microbes don't like. Moisture is one of them because it's dry. It's a dry powder. And making sure that the prebiotic or the probiotic capsule stays dry is from light. And it also is protected from heat and other harsh conditions like the acidity of the stomach. And then that, and then the little inner capsule is able to kind of open predominantly in the colon, which is really where, you know, the end of the GI tract, which is really where you want and where the majority of both your microbiome is, but also where really you want the microbes to be able to do their work.
Yeah, I'm so lives. I'm always thinking of 10,000 questions, but do you guys do any studies on the colon, the bacteria? I mean, that's such a big topic where people are dealing also with health issues. And is it called CIF or something? And they can do like fecal transplants and all that. So,
sure, you did difficile, which is like usually a hospital acquired infection. Yes, yeah, so we don't. So our chief medical officer, Dr. Zan Kisamu, who's extraordinary, he was one of the founders of Finch Therapeutics and one of the first people to pursue a therapeutic path for fecal transplants. It's called FMTs in the United States, and was the first to really, I think he's done, I don't know, 30 trials in the microbiome space. And much of his early work was actually looking at FMTs and very successfully. And it's still today one of the first and only approved probe kind of therapeutic interventions in microbiome, which is basically taking a healthy fecal sample the fecal sample of a healthy person and putting it into somebody with a C. diff infection. And you can see almost literally like the infection almost goes away. It was the only, and people were dying from these infections. And he has a beautiful story he tells during one of his talks where he will tell you as a clinician, it was like his miracle moment where there was a patient that was dying of C. diff. And literally it was like literally a woman who couldn't get out of bed and was literally gardening 2 days later. And
wow.
She pretty much the closest he had ever seen to a clinical miracle. And that is what launched his interest and involvement in microbiome.
So what do you think about, I've heard of like probiotic suppositories. And then is that something maybe Seed is looking into, or have you guys done any research with that?
You're talking about taking probiotics.
Like colon. Yeah, like colon
suppositories. No, we're not. Okay. Or we have a very effective delivery method. I haven't even, you know, in the U.S., I think sometimes you have to think a little bit about who's going to use things at scale, things that we find. And by the way, we see this even with the vaginal probiotic. American women don't really love administering vaginal tablets. And so, and I think same thing for the other side. And so I think we stay more in the oral, at least for gut microbiome. Almost all of our formulations to date are orally ingestible.
Yeah. So we'll get into the vaginal suppositories. So where was the inspiration for that? Is a lot of women struggling with their vaginal microbiome and dealing with maybe yeast infections, or especially after antibiotics or a new partner? And is that where kind of the inspiration came from?
I mean, the inspiration for when we started Seed, we I think one of the things that happens when you start Seed, I was also pregnant when I started Seed. So I was part of, you know, my pregnancy, Seed was part of my pregnancy journey and becoming a mother actually. And I think that, you know, one of the things we seed, actually, our name comes from the process of seeding, which is a biological process by which a little human acquires their very first microbes that go on to form their, you know, GI and immune system. And you know, for me, seed came out of my like very early attunement to the science that was articulating the critical importance of these early windows of life where an infant first not just acquires their first microbes, but where the microbiome develops. And that development and that development trajectory impacts their health for life. And a big part especially for vaginally born children, is those early microbes very often come from the vaginal microbiome. And so, and also started to understand that that ecology and the health of that ecology, and this is just in reproductive health, plays a huge role in whether you can get pregnant, whether you can have a healthy pregnancy, and whether you can have a healthy birth. And also correlates with things like whether you have a preterm birth or preeclampsia, et cetera. So I was very attuned to, like, just from my pregnancy journey already, very tangentially, the vaginal microbiome was already important to me, although the science was very, very early. And if you remember what I said the vision of Seed was, it was really to realize the potential of this field of the microbiome, you know, that was not just relegated to the gut. And so very early on in our journey building Seed, we met Dr. Jacques Revelle, who is probably like one of the founding, if not the founding scientists of the field of vaginal microbiome. Well, and he got the first NIH grant ever to study the vaginal microbiome. He has the largest, you know, at the time, the largest vaginal microbiome sample library. And he was a geneticist that turned his attention to this field. He also, his wife had had trouble getting pregnant, and he was very curious about the space. And on top of that, he says it kind of in a funny way, it's so much more simple. It's easier than the gut because the gut is very, very, very complex. It's the densest and most diverse microbiome of all the microbiomes of our body. But the vagina is very easy. It's actually like not diverse and it's not very dense and it's easier to study in many ways. And his work really led to the understanding that the vaginal microbiome, which just for everybody listening, is same thing as the gut, but it's the community of microbes that live in our vagina, is critical to almost every urogenital reproductive and gynecological outcome that women experience from birth through life. And its healthy functioning and its the role that it plays throughout our lives and in so many aspects of kind of keeping our, I think of it a little bit as like our vaginal immune system. It is so critical that we not just understand it, but also we understand that it is actually a field and a new frontier of women's health that is really changing the way we understand our biology. But probably more excitingly, and probably the thing I'm the most excited about, is that the vaginal microbiome is an opportunity to totally reframe our solutions for which women, there's been so little funding or so little innovation. And to back to your question as to the why, yes, there's a scientific reason, but women really are suffering. Women really, really suffer. We don't have even simple solutions to things like we don't have a solution for recurrent urinary tract infections. We don't have solutions, long-term solutions for bacterial vaginosis. We don't know the answer to PCOS. We don't understand. We don't and really have a full grasp on fertility entirely.
In the cramps, please. Can they just please get rid of cramps without me taking a bunch of ibuprofen?
So, which by the way impacts your, which ibuprofen, NSAIDs, which are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, actually also greatly impact your gut microbiome, which not a lot of people talk about either. So, you know, we really end up in these kind of cycles of managing symptoms, managing pain, taking things that then inadvertently impact something else, you know, in our microbiome. And so the vaginal microbiome for us and Dr. Revelle's work was such a huge opportunity. And so we spent almost like over 5 years developing the application of his work, which was taking the understanding that Lactobacillus crispatus, which is the most protective type strain, going back to the strain specificity, most people know that there's Lactobacillus in the vagina, but not everybody understands that there's very specific types of Lactobacillus that are the most protective, important to be the most dominant in the vagina. And so we figured out how to develop a symbiotic, which are their prebiotics and probiotics, Lactobacillus crispatus, three different strains of Lactobacillus crispatus that are combined with a prebiotic and administered as a tablet into the vagina, that we were able to demonstrate that within 21 days, we were able to convert any vaginal microbiome into a vaginal microbiome that was dominated by Lactobacillus crispatus and therefore the most protected and the most resilient and the most stable. Because the reason that we get infections is when our vaginal microbiome goes out of whack and pathogens like, you know, BV or E. coli, like with UTIs, it all of a sudden creates an environment that's hospitable for them to kind of and create infection and obviously other conditions as well. But that took a long time and originally was going to become a drug. And when we started to see the efficacy, we decided to bring it to consumer health first.
Wow, that is so amazing. So when should someone take this? I mean,
if anyone, every woman, we sell it. And the way that we created the product was you can be somebody who is responding to something that you've experienced or recurrent, you know, experience on a recurring basis. which truthfully, of course, are the people who find you first because they're desperate and they want to kind of try anything and they suffer. I take it more proactively and preventively. So for me, I think about it as the same way I take things to, the same way I take creatine. I think very similarly, I support, you know, for me, I'm supporting multiple, aspects of my health as a woman of my age. Same thing from a vaginal microbiome perspective. I just look at it as another part of my health that I'm proactively taking care of to maintain like the right and most stable ecology and the most resilient ecology in my vagina so that I have protection against infection and I can be resilient in the face of any kind of disturbances or disruptions to my vaginal microbiome. Or by the way, in the event that, for example, if I get sick and I have to take antibiotics or something happens to my gut microbiome, you know, the gut and the vagina are very connected. And so of course, you know, when you have inflammation in one part of your body or you have a immune response from something else, you know, you're very often your vagina is impacted too.
Well, this is so do you take it once a week? Do you take the suppository?
The way that we develop the product, there's this like one-time reset that's 6 tablets over the course of a month. So you wait till the period ends on your last day of after your last day of bleeding, you do a tablet day 1, 4, 7, 14, and 21, and then 28. And so you do it over the course of one cycle. That one time, it's called like the reset. That's really to kind of like really induce and bring as much lactobacillus crispatus into the vagina. And then after you've done the reset, it's just 2 tablets a month on day 1 and 14.
Oh, amazing. And then I'm sure like if you're thinking about getting pregnant, this is something that would be very beneficial. I've maybe heard this on other podcasts, you know, when you have a vaginal birth, a natural birth, the baby will get all that good bacteria. And it's so important for their immune system, all that. And so these C-sections can kind of, I think there's a few studies saying that a C-section versus a natural birth, that they will not have the allergies as much or the respiratory issues and all that. So it's,
yeah, it's. I want to be really careful because like a lot of women end up getting a lot of feeling a lot of shame from this like C-section versus versus vaginal.
Yeah. No,
the truth is, Iqbal, it's very nuanced because, just to go back for a second, the Lactobacillus crispatus vaginal microbiome is highly correlated with the best fertility outcomes. We have not done those, so I can't say that BSO1 does anything X, Y, or Z because we haven't done that clinical research. But as I said, it's more about understanding that optimal vaginal microbiome is highly correlated with the best reproductive outcomes. That said, when you just bring up vaginal, and yes, absolutely, from even at birth, of course, that dominant vaginal microbiome is a positive outcome for baby in the event of a vaginal birth. And what you're referring to with a C-section is what you see is C-section babies are born, and their microbiome looks much more like the skin. Naturally, right? It comes out and those first microbes are much more from skin to skin contact. If a child is breastfed and there is no use of antibiotics, you often see the two microbiomes start to kind of converge 6 months. And so it's a little, if a C-section baby is then administered a lot of antibiotics and ends up in the NICU and is not getting any formula, you are correct that sometimes, in some studies, there has been a lot of work to correlate and understand those early, let's call them disruptions, to the development of a healthy vaginal microbiome or a healthy microbiome in general, and the rise of, and the correlation with certain conditions later in life. That is true, but it doesn't take into account whether you need to find, you know, you need to understand the nutritional input. So is there the presence of breast milk? And you need to understand whether or not there's been exposure to broad spectrum antibiotics early in life also.
And infant formula, I guess. I'm shocked. I mean, even, you know, I this was like a year ago, my friend had a baby. I saw him at Whole Foods. I couldn't believe the infant formula. I was just extremely shocked. And he had to buy some formula from Germany, import it here. And, you know, but, and you also have a kid probiotic as well. And I thought that is so interesting because, yeah, I mean, kids these days, too, are eating a lot of sugar, a lot of processed foods, and not getting their fiber, not getting, you know, probably the good bacteria, not playing in soil and farming as much and running around in nature. So, and I just thought about this, too, because you have the capsule, but this one is a powder form. So I wanted to ask you the difference of how that works. So,
there are some of the strains are what are called micro-encapsulated. They have, like, these little, like, microscopic encapsulations. The thing that's most important, so there's you know, 9 strains in the kids formulation. It's called PDS08. That is, again, formulated kind of looking at this more like holistic kind of well-being, you know, kind of whole body health, the same way that we thought of DS01. It wasn't just GI health. It was also immune health. It was also skin. But the reason that it's in a sachet and in a powder versus, you know, DS01, which is in a capsule, is because one of the most important things for kids is that they don't get enough fiber. The reason that so many children in the United States, I think it's a crazy stat, like over half of kids like kind of can't poop in the U.S. Like we have some sort of what they call intermittent constipation. And what we really wanted to do was be able to close a little bit of the fiber gap because a lot of kids are not getting fiber. So it has 6 grams of fiber. In addition to the probiotics that are kind of microencapsulated. And again, it's nine different strains, each of which have been studied for a different thing. And then also we studied the full formulation in a trial that was published in a very, very prestigious GI journal. And that was looking at intermittent constipation in children, which we were able to.
Well, I just didn't know constipation was an issue for kids.
Oh, it's a huge, kids pooping. You just go online and type it in anywhere and you'll read it at anywhere and you'll see it's a big deal.
So do you think it's working as, so it's, is the DS01 also micro encapsulated?
It doesn't need to be because of the technology I described to you. We have our capsule technology.
Okay. So it's just with the kids formula is the micro. That's so interesting. I didn't know you can do that. I also wanted to ask you a little bit on the manufacturing side, how a probiotic gets formulated. I'm curious, you know, are you fermenting dairy? I mean, I know it's dairy-free, but how do you make probiotics?
So they're fermented, you know, so yes, you have like these massive, and probably bigger than this room, I mean, these huge, huge fermentation tanks. And there, you know, the each microbe, actually each different strain of bacteria has its own optimal conditions for what's called their yield and potency. So very similar to, you know, the reason that, you know, being a wine, you know, winemaker is such an art is that it's an art and a science. We work with some of the best fermentation for fermenters in the world and getting the media right. Like what are they using to grow, right? Or whatever makes their food source. Some different microbes use different optimal food sources. What's the temperature? What's the pH? What are the conditions under which they need to thrive? Then once they're fermented, they go through a process called like lyophilization, which is a very fancy word for like freeze drying. It's almost like suspended animation almost. And they then become rehydrated and reactivated once they hit water, which is once they're taken. And so when they're lyophilized, you can turn into a powder form. And then they're encapsulated into a same way any other capsule. They're just much, much more sensitive than, you know, than like a plant compound, for example, because they're obviously live organisms.
So you're fermenting each strain by itself.
Yes.
And then, wow, that's so interesting.
Like put your whole formulation in a tank and then have it cut.
I just never thought about like, how do you make a probiotic, you know, unless it's from like fermenting yogurt or something. That's so interesting. And then I wanted to ask you too, is there a specific time of the day that's best to take a probiotic or certain foods you should avoid when taking a probiotic?
What do you mean? You mean like say more? You mean like
I meat? Mean, yeah, like should I mean not have coffee with my probiotic?
I mean, ours like the kind of, you know, I think one of the challenges when you get really prescriptive is that you risk people not doing something they're supposed to do. I mean, look, most things are going right into like basically hydrochloric acid, right? Like it's going into your stomach. So there's very few things that you could take that are going to like make a huge impact on the actual probiotic themselves, particularly ours, just because it's encapsulated and it's opening in the GI tract. We have looked at the efficacy of ours in both a fed and fasted state. Actually see with our kids' probiotic, it's better if it's taken with food. With DSO1, our original data was, the guidance was a bit more like ideally fasted and at least a couple hours before or after a meal. But actually, we've generated new data that says really fed or fasted, we're seeing pretty similar results.
Same.
In terms of coffee, I mean, it's going right into hydrochloric. It's going into like a hot place that's very acidic. So, you know, our perspective is that it probably makes very little impact.
So interesting. Yeah, I always thought maybe I shouldn't be taking it with coffee or something.
People ask us that all the time, and our guidance, again, you know, one of the challenges is that it's more important that you take it. People ritualize these things, and then when you say don't do it, then they end up not taking it. We have no doubt of data to believe that hot or cold coffee would impact DSO1 in any way.
So what is your experience with taking, how long have you been taking the probiotic or the DSO1?
Since 2016.
Wow. And what did you notice taking it? Did you have symptoms prior and, you know, you're...
Didn't have symptoms, but I noticed, I noticed the quality of my stool. I noticed, and most people come up to you and they say, oh my God, is it the best poop of my life? Honestly, every time I take tea, it's like the best. And so that certainly, and you know, we kind of underestimate how meaningful that is in our day-to-day lives. But a lot of people, again, we take for granted that, like, I mean, look, 15% of the United States has diagnosed IBS, you know, so 80 million people in the US have a GI event every single week. So it's not something that I really take for granted that even just by improving stool quality and regularity and consistency and the ease of going to the bathroom, like that alone and the relief of bloating, like those things alone are like incredibly impactful in people's lives. You get a lot of, the thing that we hear the most about DSO1, the one phrase that we get more than anything is that it's life changing.
Well,
and that tells you where people are starting from. I think you, of course, have a lot of optimizers and people who don't necessarily have symptoms or conditions, but they say, oh, I just like feel better. I just noticed, actually, I didn't even think I was going badly, but now I'm like, when I took DSO1, I didn't realize how good it could be. And, you know, of course, there's other benefits that you don't necessarily feel. There's things that, you know, I think the interesting thing about poop is it's a biomarker that you can actually experience and see and feel. So you can see color, you can see consistency, you can see texture, you can see a lot of things about it. That's a very important clinical biomarker. That's why there's something called the Bristol stool chart, which, you know, you can kind of look at and you can see what kind of type it is. And, you know, and that kind of gives you some information or some indication of what's going on.
Did you guys do any stool tests, like pre and post, like 1 month after, 2 months after, and check different bacteria?
We look a little bit more like we're like more scientific around like looking at mechanisms of action and like what we publish about and do our real research on. I mean, we have millions of data points anecdotally of like how people feel and experience it. And the strains themselves have a lot of the clinical data already. With the kids product, the answer is yes. And also for our IBS trial, we did, and our kids trial we did as well, because we were looking at stool regularity.
Okay. Yeah, that's so interesting. I'm curious if zonulin goes down or any of those like biomarkers in the stool, it would be a great research to do. So what is the future of Seed? Where are you guys going with the microbiome? What's next?
I mean, I think what you'll start to see is us looking at some of the other parts of our lives where the microbiome or impacting the microbiome can have an impact on like the way we live every day, and probably looking at some of the categories that maybe we're already purchasing something for, and maybe and kind of reimagining it through the lens of the microbiome. And so what we're going to launch a few new products before the end of the year. So look at it.
Thinking oral probiotic. You could do a nasal. What about nasal? I'm sure people need help.
A lot of people are working on that. We had some really interesting IP a long time ago for that. I think the nasal microbiome is a really interesting landscape for sure.
Yeah, a lot of people are not thinking about nebulizing and cleansing that out, but there's viruses and everything can enters.
As a mom, people always ask me, do they want me like to skip some like crazy biohacking answer to things, and I remind them how much data there's been done on saline, even on COVID and SARS-CoV-2. And so my kids, like, every time I travel, every day, almost every day now anyway, I'm just always hydrating like the mucosa of my nose. It's amazing that kids, and we get colds and we get infections in the winter months is because our mucosa dries up and there's nothing to kind of trap pathogens. And so if you keep that area really, really, really moist, it makes a huge difference. And so they did studies. There's a great COVID paper on this. And there's a lot of papers on like cold flu, you know, other things during cold and flu season. And it's such an easy hack and it's just saline.
Wow. That is a great hack. I don't know why I didn't think about that, but
that's what I literally just use like the Arm & Hammer, like say what is my kids. And when we go skiing, anything, and like, really, they don't get sick, and it's great. Makes you huge. Yeah. There's a lot of things about microbiome that are more like mechanical than anything else. Like the oral microbiome, like tongue scraping, like removing the biofilms from the tongue is a very simple, just simple one.
I know there's so many things you can do, and it's like, what do I want to do today? How much time do I have? There's a lot of biohacking, red light, all this stuff, and it's just like, okay, let me just, you know, floss and brush my teeth today.
but I think like something like tongue scraping and just like spraying some saline, or like it's not 25 minutes of red light and a $700 device. It costs about like $1.99 on Amazon to get a tongue scraper, and saline costs like $2. And so I think I'm also really interested in things that have great science that are really accessible and can make a really big difference like in the long term, you know?
I know. Like my dry brush is like $3, and that can be very helpful for lymphatic drainage and everything. So, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I learned so much. I'm sure everyone's going to learn so much about probiotics and how amazing Seed is. This is just like doing amazing things. And I hope everyone goes and checks it out. And yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. No, I super appreciate it. I hope it was helpful. And if anyone has any questions, happy to, me and the team can answer anything for your show notes.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Thanks for tuning in into this week's episode of the Biohacker Bonnie podcast. I hope this conversation with Ara helped you better understand the vital role your gut microbiome plays in whole body health and why not all probiotics are created equal. If you're ready to upgrade your gut health with a product rooted in science, I highly recommend trying Seed's DS01, Daily Symbiotic. It's one of the best supplements I personally use and trust. Just head over to seed.com and use my code BIOHACKERBONDY for a special listener discount. As always, all links and details are in the show notes and on biohackerbondi.com under the shop tab, where I list all my favorite brands, tools, and discounts. If this episode brought you value, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Every bit helps keep the community growing. Until next time, stay curious, stay empowered, and keep biohacking your life. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Biohacker Bonnie podcast. I hope this conversation with Philip